Our scripture reading today will be from the book of Luke, chapter 10, verses 25 to 37. Just then a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he said, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? What do you read there?" He answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have given the right answer. Do this and you will live." But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hand of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." The parable of the Good Samaritan is a pretty familiar story to all of us. It's so well known that even non-Christians and people who aren't familiar at all with the Bible understand that phrase, Good Samaritan. But I think it's a really appropriate story today to talk about on Mission Sunday, because it brings out a quality of mission that's really important, which is serving a stranger in need. There's a story of a 3-year-old girl who's crying and whining when she had to go to bed one night. Her father finally went in and asked her what was wrong. "I'm scared of the dark," she cried. "But you know there's nothing that will hurt you here in your room. And besides, God's right here with you to protect you," her father told her. "But," the little girl answered, "God doesn't have any skin on." Herb Miller described Christ as God with skin on. Because of our connection with Christ, God empowers us to become God with skin on to other people. Christ tells us to love by moving beyond thinking into action. Love has hands and feet. Probably one of the most famous quotes of John Wesley, the founder of the United Methodist tradition, was, "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as you can." Mission was not just a pretty idea on Sunday mornings to John Wesley. It was a cornerstone of his faith, showing God's love through actions. I was attracted to this commitment to serving others by the Methodist Church, and I think this has also appealed to many of us sitting here today. Using our gifts, we show God's love in all parts of our life. One of my favorite hymns has the line, "They will know we are Christians by our love." Will somebody figure out that I'm a Christian by the way I act at the grocery store? The way I am on I-225? The way my coworkers, would they guess that I was a Christian? The person who calls my phone number by mistake, would they guess that I was a Christian? Can I extend God's love even when it's hard to do in the tough parts of my life? Can I serve? 2 Sundays ago, Ken Burvey talked about being in service to our church. And he pointed out the many people who have made this building into a real living church. I wanted to expand the example of mission to include the people who are serving others outside our church. We have a big congregation of givers, a family of people who look beyond themselves and take the scripture, "Love thy neighbor," seriously, to be God with skin on. Many people in this congregation I know are actively involved in organized groups that do service. Rotary Club, Kiwanis, Scouts, PTOs, PTAs, and other kinds of organizations like that. And I was wondering if those of you who are involved in an organization, if you could raise your hand. and just indicate that you're involved in a service organization. I think there's a lot of us. Thank you. Many of us are also involved in personal volunteer ventures. For example, I've been active for about 13 years with La Leche League, and I've been a volunteer breastfeeding counselor with them and a leader. For the past 3 years or so, I've been acting as an on-call advisor for a group of women prisoners who are enrolled in a drug and treatment treatment center that's located at Fort Logan Mental Hospital. I go out there about once a month, and I'm also on call to go visit moms when they have needs, to talk to them about breastfeeding concerns, and I also talk to the whole group every couple of months. These women are going through a really intensive three-year program. In order to qualify to be in the program, they have to have two qualifications. They have to be pregnant, and they have to be in jail. And the conditions in jail are not very good if you're pregnant. You don't get very much prenatal care, if any, and when your baby's born, you get to have your baby for 15 minutes, and that's it. So the incentive for these moms is if they come to this treatment program, they can keep their babies with them after they deliver, and the babies are in very high-quality daycare while the moms are in their therapy sessions during the day. The moms get a real long lunch hour to be with their babies, and then they live with their babies in the evening in group home settings. The program directors started this program because they really believed that intense bonding with their babies would help these moms get their addictions under control. Most of these moms, this isn't their first baby. Some of the moms I've worked with, this was her 10th. But usually this is the only baby they've had custody of, that they currently have custody of, because they've lost the other children because of their issues with addiction. But the program director saw breastfeeding as a way to help these moms feel closer to their babies and to appreciate the vital role they have in being mothers to them. So it's been an amazing volunteer job for me. I was pretty nervous going in, but I've really learned to respect the moms that are in the program. They have a really hard road, and they work very hard to get over their addictions and while at the same time that they're parenting. It's not something that everybody can accomplish. A lot of times, I just do simple things. I just give them reassurance and support, a little bit of information, accept them where they're coming from. And most of the time, that's all they seem to need, just another listening ear. I've seen some moms who've really had setbacks and not done well, and I've seen some moms that have just soared with the program and have done super well. And that's been very rewarding for me as well. I have a background in counseling and experience with lactation and a lot of training in that too. So I've been blessed that I've been able to use both these skills in my volunteer opportunity that I've had. I've asked other people to talk today about their volunteer opportunities too. And some people chose to have those read and some people have chose to speak. And I was wondering, Esther, would you like to come up now and talk about yours?
Good morning. I'm the chairman of the Homebound Visitation Committee. That was founded by Carolyn Mackey in 1989, and she chaired it for years until she moved in 1995. She felt there was a need for a contact on a regular basis with the people who are shut in by visit, phone call, or a card. Well, she moved in 1995 and no one took it. No one took the committee. They just left those people with no contact. So in January of 1996, my daughter Denise and I took it. And we restarted the committee. Our visitors are Esther Burke, and will you please stand as I say your name? Debbie Burns, Alma Fitzgerald, Willa Gallier, Denise Gavant, Carolyn Mackey's, and thank you, Carolyn, for coming back to us. Alice Martin, Garnet McGill, Judy Mitchell, Eleanor Rowe, and Esther Smith. I want to thank you, ladies, for all your loyalty and your faithfulness. Without you, we couldn't do this. But the people need us. And I also want to thank my... Yeah, big thank you for the ladies. And I want to thank my long-suffering husband who makes up the newsletter for the shut-ins every other month. And now I would like to tell you about the committee that knits or crochets for the hospital, for the Aurora Medical Center. We called it Elma's Dream because Elma Paulson had a dream that she would knit a little hat and she could take it to a baby in a hospital. And so we made that dream come true. She'd knit a little hat. We found a hospital that would take the knitted materials, and I found more people who would like to knit. And then they didn't just want hats, though. They wanted blankets. So that grew. And those members are Denise Gavant, Elma Paulson, and would you please stand if you're here, or if you're not here? Shirley Neff, Judy Phillips, Helen Skutkin, Esther Smith, Virginia Stevan, and many of you know her, she used to be a member, Donna Reichel, and Diane Reichel, Evelyn Wilbur, Stella Marker, Jim Cantor, and Jerry Neely, our secretary. And Wanda McConico and her mother made lots and lots of blankets, which we really appreciated. And we thank you so much.
Thank you, Esther. I'm now going to speak about Betty Lekas and her volunteer opportunities. Can you raise your hand so people can see where you are? Just raise your hand. Okay. Betty is a retired nurse, and she spent the majority of her nursing career working in nursing home settings. She was always intrigued by what people had to say about their lives, but as a nurse, she never really had time to sit down and really listen to them, tell them their life stories to her and things like that. After she retired from nursing, she approached the activity director at the Veterans State Nursing Home about starting a discussion group. So for the past 2.5 years, Betty has gone once a month to the State Veterans Nursing Home for what she calls reminiscing with Betty. Between 12 to 14 patients meet with her, they introduce themselves, and then Betty facilitates a conversation, and they get talking about childhood memories, military experiences, whatever else comes up in the discussion. She feels the patients enjoy this time to reminisce and to form friendships with each other while keeping their mental capacity sharpened. It's been a very rewarding volunteer opportunity for Betty, as she enjoys seeing the interaction between the participants. As she makes sure each patient gets an opportunity to speak, she takes a microphone around to each one of them so they all can hear clearly. She's noticed that some of the quiet attendees are starting to really come out of their shell and talk a lot more. Betty's both using her skills as a nurse and her connection to the military in this mission work. Thank you. Now, by the way, she's my mom. I'd also like to talk about the work that Carol Danielson is doing. Carol, can you raise a hand? There she is back there. Carol has worked for the last 2 years in the Media Center at Roar Hills Middle School. She works 4 hours a week, and she works in the Media Center reorganizing the books on the shelves. This is a job that the librarians just get way too busy to be able to accomplish. Carol receives a lot from doing this. She is part of a program called STEP, so she gets a reduction in her taxes by participating in this program. She does this with friends and neighbors, and so she enjoys that socializing and fellowship time. And she also knows that she's helping the librarians out a great deal, because this is just a task they can't get to, but it's so important in keeping the media centers running. Carol wanted me to mention that a couple of our other members, Mary Blythe, raise a hand, Mary, and Judy Phillips, are also doing this over at Virginia Court Elementary. Is that correct? You're working in the media center there as well? Yes. So we have other people doing this in other places as well. And I'm sure if you would like to know more about the STEP program, I'm sure any of these ladies would be very happy to talk to you about it. Now I'd like to talk about Dean Hughes. Dean, can you raise a hand if people don't know you? There he is. This is Dean's writings. I have attempted to be working as a volunteer ever since I retired permanently in October of 1979. In fact, I started driving for Meals on Wheels 3 weeks after retirement in a city that was basically unfamiliar to me. Most of the time, I've been busy in at least two sites. At present, I work one full day a week when I'm in town as a cataloger and inventory person at the Aurora History Museum. I have been active with them since March of 1990. Because of my long period of service, I have been there much longer than any of the staff, and I'm often consulted as to what happened at some point in previous years. As a former farmer and then a structural engineer, I had absolutely no training in the field, but have found that these white hairs on my head have given me experiences that can't be matched by their trained personnel. There are very few items that are given to the museum that I have not used personally or seen others work with. My basic task as a cataloger is to number and fully describe an article and all of its individual parts in detail, record how and when it came into the museum's possession, make notes as to its present condition and any markings that make it easily recognized. Each individual part, no matter what size, is numbered because there's always a chance that it could become separated from the others, and it must be identified and returned to its proper location. Many times there are a large number of parts for each item. To make it easy for you to think about what I'm talking about, think of an open box containing a deck of cards. Or think of an old-fashioned treadle sewing machine with its drawers full of bobbins, needles, and attachments. Each item is then put on a numbered shelf or other identifiable location in the collections room. We then can go immediately to obtain any article that's needed for exhibit or other use. That room is always kept locked and is under climate control, so the deterioration can be kept to a minimum. All of my work is done in that room, so if you come to the museum, you'll never see me at work. The records I make are then computerized and kept in the office of the collections manager. An effort to take digital pictures of all kinds is added to those records is now beginning, but it's going slowly because the city's lack of funds reduces the available personnel. The number of items received in any donation can vary from one to a maximum so far of 1,414 items. When one draws one of the larger donations, he feels he has a lifetime task ahead of him. All the identifiable items of the museum has received are now cataloged. Our work now is to track down as much knowledge as possible for items that have never been properly identified. These problems are the result of not having enough people to keep adequate records in the early days of the museum, which started in the late 70s with only one person and very little room. There were also donations left at the door at that time with no note given as to who gave them. The museum was moved from Florence Street to its present location in the old courthouse shortly after I started to work. Everything was boxed for the move, and apparently some of those boxes were lost. We are also trying to identify what some of those items were so our records can be complete. Another of my duties there is to use a computer to keep track of the museum foundation membership and make mailing labels for those who need them. I learned what I know of computer operation at the Aurora Senior Center and have been a part of the teaching staff there for approximately 5 years. Except for isolated cases, I'm not an instructor, but serve as coach at all levels of the classes. We have 8 computers, so we can serve a maximum of 8 students in any one class. A coach serves as an assistant to anyone who's not quite understanding the material being taught at the moment. That allows the instructor to keep moving at a steady pace and completely cover the required material for the session. Any person coming to the center to take classes can get instruction from the basics, which starts with how to turn the beast on and off, to quite advanced subjects such as the proper use of a digital camera or genealogy. Since learning the computer, I have never darkened the door of a Hallmark store. I have had trouble with my voice many times since I had tubes down my throat for most of a month while I had bypass surgery in 2000. That fact keeps me from attempting to be an instructor there, where I would have to be speaking for a full 2.5 hours. My main assignment with the center is to be in charge of the lab on Friday mornings when any of our computer students at any level can come in for help. That can get hectic if you have students who are just beginning and others who are at varying levels of learning. I make no promises that I can answer all questions, but I find that I have to turn to more informed people very seldom. I hope that now you have a good bird's eye picture of the things I do to keep myself out of mischief. Thank you, Dean.